Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Lefonier. There's Westerns in this hour. Later on, Have Gun Will Travel, but first a broadcast of the six-shooter called Johnny Stringer, an NBC episode first heard on April 22nd, 1954.
You'll hear James Stewart as the Six Shooter, just one of many fine programs brought to you each week on NBC. Tomorrow night, there's top comedy entertainment with the Bob Hope Show, the Phil Harris Alice Faye Show, and Can You Top This with Senator Ford. Bob Hope delivers rapid-fire comedy routines, while Phil Harris and Alice Faye bring both mirth and music. It's a great Friday night lineup of comedy programs, all of them heard only on NBC. James Stewart as the Six Shooter. The man in the saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother of pearl. Its handle unmarked. People call them both the Six Shooter. The NBC Radio Network presents James Stewart as the Six Shooter, a transcribed series of radio dramas based on the life of Britt Ponsett, the Texas plainsman who wandered through the Western territories, leaving behind a trail of still remembered legends.
Looked like I was going to get much sleep that night. The Prospect Hotel was right in the middle of town, and from my room, I could hear just about everything went on outside. And there wasn't much I could do about the noise, either. It was too doggone hot to shut the window. The sun had been down for a couple of hours, but there wasn't any breeze, and my room being on the second floor, well, the heat just seemed to sort of hang there. Whew. Boy. Yeah. Along about 10 o'clock, I finally managed to doze off. I wasn't exactly sound asleep, you understand. It was just sort of in between, you might say. What the Sam Hill is... For a second, I thought maybe I'd dreamt that shot. And then I heard somebody come running out of the front door of the hotel and jump on a horse. By the time I got across the room to the window, whoever it was had ridden out of sight. Well, I pulled on my pants. I headed downstairs. I was the first person to reach the lobby. Sid Tucker, he was the fellow who owned the hotel. Sid was standing behind the registration desk, hanging on with both hands. Hey, what happened, Sid? He opened his mouth to give me an answer, but the words just didn't come out. And he started to teeter a little bit from side to side, and then he toppled over. When I got around behind the desk where he was lying, I saw the pink stain across the front of his shirt. It was getting redder every second.
Anything wrong here? I thought I heard a shot. Britt?
Well, it's Sid Tucker. You better get Doc Prince quick.
Well, sure.
Oh, yeah, and get the sheriff, too, if you can find him, will you? I managed to carry Sid into the dining room, laid him out on the table. I figured the doc might have to do some probing for that bullet in Sid's belly. And if Sid was in a good hard surface, he'd have a little easier time handling him. By this time, everybody in the hotel was crowding around seeing what was wrong. Sid was still breathing, but there was a kind of a raspy noise with every breath he took, and the bleeding was worse than ever. Gee whiz, he was bad off, all right, no doubt about that. Well, it was about 10 minutes before Doc Prince got there. It seemed a lot longer, of course, but
let me through.
It was just about that time.
Now, just go on back to bed, everybody. Go on now. There's nothing you can do here. You'd just be in my way. Please, go on now. You stick around, Britt, if you don't mind.
Why?
Well, I might need somebody to help hold him down.
Oh, sure.
Sid's going to be all right, ain't he, Doc?
Well, I haven't even had a chance to examine him yet. Oh, now, come on, folks. Outside. Please, outside. I'll let you know what his prospects are as soon as I find out myself.
I'm afraid that's not much of a bandage, Doc, but it's the best I could do under the circumstances.
Sure, Rick. Looks like the bullet may have hit a kidney. Now, I told you, folks... Oh, hello, Sheriff.
Howdy, Doc. Britt.
Oh, Sam.
How is he?
Not good, Sam. Not good at all. He's lost a lot of blood, and he's hemorrhaging pretty bad.
Mm-hmm. You around when it happened, Britt?
No, I heard a shot, and I came downstairs as fast as I could, but he was alone when I got here.
Up here.
Well, I'm not going to be able to do any digging for that bullet now. It's in too deep.
Listen, it sounds like he's coming, too.
Yeah.
Doc, is it all right for me to try and talk to him?
Well, I reckon it won't make much difference one way or the other.
Now, Sid.
I got an awful pain in my belly. What?
Here, now, you just lie there easy, Sid. Don't do no moving around.
Hurts bad, Doc. Awful bad.
Yeah, now, you've been shot, Sid.
Shot?
You remember anything about it?
No, Sheriff. I'm afraid I don't. Oh, yeah, I recollect.
Yeah?
He told me to give him the box. Tin box with the money the folks asked me to keep for him.
You know who it was?
Your money, Britt. Your cash is in that box.
No, don't worry yourself about that.
Did you recognize him, Sid?
What?
The fellow who shot you. Did you get a look at him?
John Stringer.
Stringer, huh?
Must have been him. This way, he sure resembled that fella on the wanted posters on the wall here.
See?
He's not gonna answer no more questions, Sam.
Yeah.
You think it was Stringer, Sam?
Well, could have been. I didn't know he was in these parts, but it's the kind of hold-up murder he's pulled before.
Yeah?
Guess there's only one way to find out for certain. Let's go, Britt.
What?
Pick up his trail if we can.
Yeah, but...
You'll come with me, won't you?
Well, sure, Sam, but if you think you need me, but there are plenty of local residents and make up a posse without...
I'm not taking a posse, Britt. Might be morning before I could get one together. By then, his trail would be cold. Stringer rides alone, usually. I reckon the two of us can handle him. Your horse in the stable?
Yeah.
Well?
All right, Sam. I'll get Scar and meet you out in front, huh? I'd heard about Johnny Stringer. He'd killed his first man when he was only 14 years old, and they said he'd managed at least one more every year since. He's still young, though, 21, 22. Supposed to be a handsome boy, black curly hair, brown eyes, and a little scar on the side of his neck from a gunfight somewhere near Salt Lake City. I'd never met up with him in person. As a matter of fact, this was further south than he usually strayed. That is, if it was Stringer who'd killed Sid Tucker. Well, we got our horses, Sam and I, and started looking for the trail. The fellow I'd heard ride off just after the shooting had been heading east toward the Furnace Hills, so we rode out that way. There was a lot of moon, and after milling around 15, 20 minutes, we spotted some fresh tracks along the creek at the edge of town. Of course, we still had no reason to be certain that this was the right trail. Hold on a minute, Sam. Whoa, Scar. Whoa.
What's the matter, Britt?
Okay. Over there beside that cactus. What's that look like to you?
I don't see any. Oh, yeah.
Easy, boy. Easy.
That's the tin box Sid was talking about?
Yeah, the kid must have shot the lock open.
Empty, huh?
Yeah.
Probably got tired carrying it.
Mm-hmm.
Hotel should have had a safe. Been telling Sid Tucker that for years.
Yeah, well, this box always served the same purpose.
Up till now.
Yeah, up till now.
Sid said he was keeping some of your money for you.
Yeah, a couple of months' pay.
That's too bad.
Oh, well, I'll get over it. Sid won't. Well, no point hanging on to this anymore, I guess.
Yeah,
At least we know we're on the right track, Britt.
Yeah, that's something. All right, Scar, let's go. Well, he had an hour's head start, maybe more. And we had to take it pretty slow to be sure we wouldn't lose the trail. So it didn't seem like we had much chance of catching up to him. Not very soon, anyhow. But then, just about dawn, when the eastern sky started to show a few slivers of orange and yellow, those tracks we were following took on a different look.
Britt?
Uh-huh?
See now? Something must have happened to his horse.
Yeah.
Feels like maybe he went lame.
Yeah, sure does, doesn't it?
See here, Britt, you see?
Oh, boy. Oh.
Must have stopped to rest for a spell.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, boy. Don't seem like it did much good, though. Horse was lamer than ever when they started up again.
He couldn't have been making very much time here on, that's for sure.
Yep. Better keep our eyes open. Might be running into him any minute.
We were in the Furnace Mountains now, and the sun was coming up hot. Oh, this is going to be another scorcher, all right. You could feel everything start to warm up already. The trail we were following showed more and more signs of the horses in pretty bad shape, and the places where he'd stopped to rest were getting closer and closer together until finally we saw the fellow on the saddle had just given up trying to ride and started moving out ahead on foot. Easy, Scott, easy.
Might as well leave the horses here, Britt. You can't be much further now.
Yeah. Sam.
Hmm?
Hey, over there in the cabin on the side of the ravine there.
Uh-huh.
Know whose it is?
No, I ain't never been on this slope before.
Well, somebody's living there. From the looks of that smoke, I'd say they're cooking breakfast.
Let's close in.
We started up the side of the ravine, moving slow, keeping the rocks for cover. It wasn't until we were about 20 yards away that I noticed the barn. Sitting in front of a clump of trees across a little clearing, we swung a little to our left. If we could just get over to the barn without anybody seeing us, then we could move into the cabin itself. But we were still in a place, and we had to get past that clearing first.
He ain't spotted us, Britt.
I guess not. If he's really here.
Look at those tracks leading into the barn. Same horse we've been following. I'd stake my life on it.
Yeah, they do look kind of familiar.
Best thing we can do now is rush the back door to the cabin. If it's unlocked, we can be inside before he even knows what's happened. If it ain't, we'll have to shoot our way in.
All right, Sam. You're calling the turn. It was about 30, 40 feet from the barn to the cabin itself. Sam rocked back on his heels and he gave a lunge forward. He was a big man. We couldn't move plenty fast. All I could do was keep up with him. That door was unlocked, all right, and we charged inside like a couple of Texas steers.
Get your hands up. Get him up quick.
Mrs. McGinnis.
Well, who are you?
Who are you? What are you doing here? Where'd you break in like this?
We don't mean any trouble, miss.
Then why did you come?
You
think to rob me, no? Well, I have nothing to steal. You have picked the wrong cabin, senor.
Yeah. Sort of looks like maybe we have.
We'll return to James Stewart as the Six Shooter in just a moment. Not all careless drivers have accidents, but many such careless drivers cause accidents. A woman driver who drives slowly down Main Street while doing a little window shopping is a menace. So is the man who insists on telling the people in the back seat of his car about his poker game last week. It's no wonder that ordinarily cautious drivers start to lose their tempers and take dangerous chances to pass these careless drivers. When an accident results, the person who caused the accident probably won't even be touched. So the National Safety Council says if you want a window shop, get out and walk. If you are too busy describing one of your sterling feats to pay any attention to traffic, get out and walk. The driver's license you have does not give you the right to endanger the lives of your passengers or other human beings. Driving can be dangerous. Keep your mind on what you're doing or walk. Now, Act Two of The Six Shooter, starring James Stewart as Britt Ponsett.
Well, she was a real pretty girl. About 20, jet black hair and black eyes that sort of flash sparks when she talked. At least they were flashing sparks at us for a while. But finally we managed to get her quieted down. We explained that we weren't trying to rob her. We were just looking for an outlaw somewhere in these parts.
No. No. I have seen no one.
You're sure about that?
Gee, there has been nobody. Last night, last week, nobody.
You live here all alone?
This cabinet belongs to my father, Alfredo Mendez. He's dead now. 6 months. I live alone.
I must be kind of lonely, a young girl like you.
I'm busy. I take care of cows. I plant seeds. There will be food for winter.
Yeah. Well, I think I'll take a look around outside, the barn maybe.
Well, you look there. I tell you, there's no one.
Yeah, that's what you told us.
Want me to go with you, Sam?
No. You might check the rest of the cabin, though, Britt.
Sure.
You think I lie? You think I would protect these bandidos you tell me about? I am Maria Gonzalez Mendez. I do not lie.
All right. Now, don't get excited, Maria. If he should be in this neighborhood and you didn't know about it, well, it'd be for your own good if we turned him up, wouldn't it?
I guess so. But your friend, he does not trust me.
Well, Sam's a sheriff. He can't afford to take chances. You mind showing me the rest of the place here?
If you like. This is the men room. You call it the parlor. Here is where I sleep.
What's that door over there?
The bedroom of my father. It is still as it was when he...
Yeah.
You're satisfied?
I'm satisfied Stringer isn't in the cabin, Maria.
You're like your friend. You do not trust me either. Why would I have this man if he's what you say he is?
I sure don't know.
He killed someone last night?
That's right.
You did not see him do it?
No, but the man he shot, well, he recognized Stringer.
Stringer? It is a funny name.
Yeah?
I never heard of him.
Well, he's pretty well known. This isn't his only killing by a whole lot.
Has nothing to do with me.
Well, he's not in here, Sam.
Yeah. Well, he's not in the barn either. But his horse is.
What?
No, Senor, no. It is my horse, the one you saw.
I suppose you've been riding him all night, huh?
I do not know what you mean.
Well, somebody sure been giving him a workout. They even rode him after he went lame, too. Now, why don't you start telling us the truth for a change? How about it?
It does not matter. He has gone. I get to him another pony and he rides away. Long before you get here, he is gone.
Well, now I'll be...
You will never catch him now. That is why I pretend I think you want to rob me when you come.
Minor known.
But he has killed no one. And his name, it is no Stringer. It is Johnny Davis. Tells me that you will look for him and that you will blame him for things he does not do.
Sure, that's what he told you, and you had to believe him, didn't you?
He would not lie to me.
Well, I guess you ain't the first senorita that got taken in by Johnny Stringer. Even his wife, he's talked her into putting up with him on and off for the last 5 years, and she's supposed to be a pretty decent girl.
His wife?
That's right, Maria. Johnny's married, has been since he was 18 or so.
It is not my concern, this Johnny Stringer.
It is, huh? Your friend Davis, has he got black hair, curly black hair?
Many men have black hair.
And many men don't have a scar on their neck, right here.
A scar?
We're just wasting time, Britt. We got a trail to pick up.
Yeah.
Wait. He lied to me about this scarf. He tried to make me think that my Juanito is the same man you look for. You lie about him.
I told you the truth, Maria.
But he could not be married. No, it is not so. He's promised to marry me.
How long has Stringer been staying here?
No, Stringer. He's not Stringer. His name is Davis. Johnny Davis.
How long has he been here?
2 weeks. He stays in my father's room 2 weeks. I find him with a bullet in his leg. He's hurt. I make him well. He says he loves me.
Yeah.
He goes yesterday to arrange for the wedding.
He couldn't marry you, Maria. If he did, it wouldn't be a real marriage.
No, senor, no. He says he loves me. He tried to feel it in my heart. If he does not have love for me, I would know.
Britt.
Yeah?
He's got a fresh horse. We'd better get moving.
Yeah, sure. Come on.
He is the horse, senor.
What?
The man with his car. He has no horse.
Where is he, Maria?
He tries to fool me that he's married, that he has a wife. He makes this up to fool me.
Where is he?
The barn.
But I already...
The loft of the barn that first he hides, the loft. Now I have told you the truth. You must...
Yeah?
You must tell me the truth about John. There's no reason to fool me any longer. You must tell me the truth.
But it is the truth, Maria. All of it. And I'm sorry.
You ready, Britt?
Yeah, I'm ready. We walked outside. We didn't draw our guns. We just strode along as though we were going to go right past the barn. And when we got even with the door, Sam nodded and we took a couple of quick steps and pressed flat against the building.
Stringer? We know you're in there. Stringer!
Sam waited a minute or so and then we started inching toward the open door. I took my cue from him and started moving in the opposite direction. Well, he was up there all right. And he was in a good position to cover that door, too, if either one of us so much as got near it.
We ain't no hurry, Stringer. We can wait.
You wait a long time, mister.
Sam? Yeah? Is there any other way of getting inside, around the back, maybe?
There's a window, but it's too small to crawl through.
Isn't that he's using up a lot of bullets?
Trouble is, we don't know how many loads he's carrying.
Yeah.
Guess we'll just have to try smoking him out. Ain't no breeze. Ought to be safe enough.
What about the horse?
He's just inside the door. He ain't tied up or nothing. He'll come out before it gets too bad.
Okay. I'll go around and back.
I managed to get to the rear of the barn by hugging the sides of the building and keep out of range. Every once in a while, I could hear Stringer get off another shot. But he was still aiming towards Sam, trying to make sure that we didn't rush him. I found some dry brush and pushed it up against the barn. And then I broke through the window with the butt of my gun. And that told Stringer where I was. He sure didn't like it. I flattened down and I stayed that way until I got a handful of brush burning. And then I raised up a couple of inches and then threw it inside. I didn't know whether it would catch or not. So I stayed there where I was so I could be sure. Yeah, I must have been lucky. It had hit some rags and papers. Anyway, a good steady stream of smoke was pouring out the broken window. And Stringer would have to start moving out pretty soon. He wasn't doing any shooting, so I made my way around the front again. The smoke would start to come out the door, and the whole inside of the barn was filled up with it. Never know about a horse during a fire. Some of them would just stand right in the middle of it and not make a move to save themselves. But there was only one direction Maria's pony could head, and that was outside. So he finally put his nose down to count and galloped and passed. About a minute later, Stringer followed his example. He was holding a bandana over his mouth with one hand, and the other hand was stuck up in the air. We were both covering him, Sam and me. It didn't look like we had anything to worry about. And then I saw a flicker of metal behind that bandana. But before I could do anything about it...
Juanito!
She ran in front of us and threw herself in his arms.
I figured you wouldn't let me down, honey.
He pulled her tight against him and the bandana fell away from the revolver he was holding.
All right, gents, drop him. I said drop him, unless you want to shoot her in the back.
Danny.
Drop him, I said. And I ain't going to wait much longer.
Okay, Stringer.
You too, mister. Now, honey, just stay close to me. We're getting out of here.
Will you take me, Johnny?
What's the difference?
You take me to get married like you promised? Remember, Johnny promised me this would be our
wedding. Sure, I remember, but we got other things to think about now. Where'd they leave their horses, Maria? Did they tell you?
I got on my mother's white dress. The dress she was wearing.
Yeah, yeah.
I dress at night. The lace. And a very pretty dress.
Oh, shut up. What about their horses?
Why don't you tell her you won't marry her, Stringer? That you can't, even if you wanted to.
I wouldn't do a lot of talking if I was you, mister.
Tell her about your wife in Utah. And some of the other girls have helped you over a tight spot. You're not the first, Maria, not by a long shot.
I warned you, mister. I told you.
Say, why do you care, Johnny, if they're not true? But they are true. Aren't they, Johnny?
I never said they were true.
I have to say. I know. In my mother's white dress with the lace, I would not wear it today.
What if I am married? That doesn't mean that we can't.
Maria. For a second, I didn't realize what had happened. Stringer was staring at Maria like he'd never seen her before, and then he started to raise the revolver he was holding, his finger on the trigger, but he never finished squeezing it. He slid out of Maria's arms and fell face down on the bed. It was a small knife with a fancy silver handle buried deep in his back, right between his shoulder blades.
You will want to take me with you now. Not Juanito. But I would like to change my dress first. I think I would like to wear the white one with the lace. After all.
Well, we waited around till we were sure the fire was out, and then we took Maria back to Prospect. I don't know whether what she'd done was murder or not. Stringer was holding a gun on us. Maybe she saved their lives. And he sure had it coming to him. There wasn't much doubt about that. I gave Judge Ricker a statement, and then I left Prospect. I guess if there was a trial, Maria must have come out of it all right. At least I hope so.
The word research has become pretty familiar to all of us in the last 10 years or so. But have you ever stopped to think what research, especially medical research, means to you personally? Without research, we would have no penicillin or any of the other wonder drugs. Research is also the most important weapon in the fight against mental illness. And mental illness today afflicts more than 9 million people. Already, research has opened up leads for preventing many mental illnesses, and research has shown us speedier and more effective ways of helping mentally sick people to get well. Research scientists say we can be hopeful, but they need help from us. They need money to carry on research. If we help science, science can give us a much better chance to escape mental illness and to cure mental illness if it should strike. If you'd like to help, give to the Mental Health Fund in care of your local postmaster. Just address Mental Health Fund in care of your local postmaster. Don't wait. This worthwhile cause needs your support now. Transcribed NBC Radio Network production in association with Review Productions. It is based on a character created by Frank Burt and is written by him. Mr. Stewart may currently be seen in the Universal International picture, The Glenn Miller Story. Others in the cast were Virginia Gregg, Harry Bartell, Carly Bear, Joel Cranston, and Barney Phillips. Special music for this program was by Basil Adlam. and the entire production is under the direction of Jack Johnstone. All characters and incidents were fictitious, and any resemblance to actual characters or incidents is purely coincidental. By the way, you'll be interested in knowing that the Six Shooter has been chosen for broadcast to our men overseas through the facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Services. This is John Wall speaking. Here an address by President Eisenhower, next on the NBC Radio Network.
The Six Shooter, on Tuned To Yesterday from April 22nd, 1954, on NBC. This is an hour of Westerns on Tuned To Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now an episode of Have Gun, Will Travel, penned by writer Ann Dowd, who had a couple of broadcasts contributed to the Suspense series in 1956, would go on to write fresh or adapt episodes for the Have Gun series from 1959 through 1960, well over 40 of them. This story from her, called About Face, was broadcast on CBS on December 27, 1959.
This situation is so mixed up with Chinese custom, family, and honor, I don't know where to turn. I'm afraid any move I make might endanger Hey Boy's life.
Have Gun, Will Travel. Starring Mr. John Daner as Paladin. San Francisco, 1875. The Carlton Hotel, headquarters of a man called Paladin.
Psst.
Huh?
Mr. Paladin.
Well, hey, boy, what in the world are you doing hiding behind that potted palm?
Shh.
Ooh. Sorry. Not hide and seek, hey, boy?
Oh, it's not frivolous matter, Mr. Paladin. More serious. Is Missy Wong coming down the hallway?
No, she turned into the linen room. If you're hiding from her, you can come out now.
Oh, good. Mr. Paladin, may I see you in room, please, for a discussion of most disturbing matter?
Why, certainly, hey, boy. Come on. Trouble?
Oh, my. Plenty of trouble, Mr. Paladin.
Go on in, hey, boy.
Well, yes, sir.
Now, what's the idea of trying to dodge Miss Wong? What have you been up to this time?
Oh, Mr. Paladin, hey boy cannot come face to face with Miss Wong at this moment. Hey boy confused, hey boy crushed under a weight of most distressing problem.
Oh, come now, can't be that bad.
Oh, yes, sir, it's much worse. Here, this letter come from China today for hey boy.
Huh? Oh, I see, well... Of course, I could probably make a more intelligent comment if I could read Chinese.
Oh, Mr. Paladin, this is a letter from Mei Jen, or how you say, go-between.
Go-between?
Yes, sir. Or the same like the marriage broker. This letter say go-between is come to San Francisco to settle arrangements for Hey Boy's marriage to his betrothed.
Your marriage to your betrothed?
Yes, sir, Mr. Paladin, that's what it says.
Well, no wonder you didn't want to face Miss Wong. Hey, boy, do you think you've been exactly fair to her, considering you're engaged to be married to a girl in China?
Oh, but, hey, boy, forget all about engagement to marry.
Now, wait a minute. An engagement to marry is not the sort of thing that just slips one's mind.
Oh, Mr. Paladin, you no understand.
Well, shall we try again?
Marriage contract made when, hey, boy, 9 years old. Hey, boy, don't know girl, never see girl. Parents make deal.
Oh, like that.
When, hey, boy, 15, he come to America. Oh, so different. Many things happen. He forget.
Yes, I see.
Yeah, hey, boy, like America. Hey, boy, like Miss Wong. But now come go between those settled arrangements for marriage in China with girl hey, boy, never seen. Hey, boy, must leave America. Hey, boy, must leave Miss Wong. And, oh, my.
Surely you're not obligated to go through with this thing.
Well, here is most distressing problem, Mr. Paladin. Hey boy, mother, father, now dead. But aunts, uncles, cousins, and girl, father, mother, aunts, uncles, cousins, all live in same village in China. And hey boy must do nothing to make lose a face. And hey boy in pretty pickle, huh?
Yeah.
You help, maybe?
Well, I don't know. It's a little out of my line, hey boy, but I can try, I guess.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Pelley.
Well, it seems to me, hey boy, that you're going to have to make a stand.
Make a stand?
That's right. Now, I realize how important it is to save face and to avoid bringing dishonor to the families, but you'll just have to be firm. What's the girl's name?
Her name, May. Her father, Gi Kung.
Gi Kung. Any connection with the Gi family here in San Francisco?
Oh, yes, sir.
Is it the Gi family that controls the Gi Sun Yap Tong?
Yes, sir. Same family.
I guess that's the most powerful Tong in San Francisco's Chinatown.
Oh, yes, sir.
Well, they can call it a Chinese Mutual Benefit Association, but I guess you know as well as I do that they have their fingers on every underworld activity on the Barbary Coast.
Yes, sir.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. How about Gi Kum Ho, the Tong hatchet man, also known as Bloody Pete?
Oh, Bloody Pete, he May's brother.
Ooh.
Well, you see, Mr. Paladin, very essential, hey boy, not bring dishonor to family.
Oh, yes, I'm beginning to understand. Losing face takes on a new meaning. You tangle with Bloody Pete, and you're apt to lose your whole head.
Oh, my...
One thing, hey boy, you're going to have to face Miss Wong and explain this whole thing to her.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my.
Can you make the passing grade in driving? In other words, do you know and do you use what you know about safe passing practices? Almost every driver finds it necessary to pass other drivers at times. Pass, friend. But do it safely.
I wanted to help, hey boy, but when I began to weigh the odds, I was doubtful of success. The opposing force was too strong. 4,000 years of custom and tradition and the most powerful organization in San Francisco's Chinatown, the Gi Sung Yap Tong. Even more discouraging was the fact that Hey Boy's prospective brother-in-law was none other than the highbinder known as Bloody Pete, chief of the Tong's professional murderers. I felt I would never fully understand Chinese custom, but I knew all I needed to know about killers. I thought about it all through the night, and in the morning it seemed so hopeless that for a moment I allowed myself to wonder what San Francisco would be like without Hey Boy. It was very depressing. Also, I hated the thought of facing poor little Miss Wong. Come in. Oh. Good morning, Miss Wong.
Good morning, Mr. Paladin. All right, clean rooms now?
Oh, yes. Yes, of course, Miss Wong. Go right ahead. Miss Wong, you seem so light-hearted this morning.
Oh, yes, Miss Wong, most I'm light-hearted.
Have you seen Hey Boy?
Yes, sir.
But did he have a chance to talk to you?
Oh, yes, sir.
Regarding a very grave matter?
Hey Boy tell Miss Wong about marriage contract with girl in China.
But you, Miss Wong...
What's the matter, Mr. Paladin?
Nothing, I guess, except that it's constantly being brought home to me.
What, Mr. Paladin?
You can't figure women. I thought you'd be heartbroken, or at least angry.
Oh, you smart man, Mr. Paladin. Hey, boy, smart man. You fixed.
It's nice you have such confidence in us, but I'm not so sure.
Oh, almost forgot. This letter come for you.
Oh, thank you. I see. This is from Mr. Sui Li Tsung.
Yes, sir. He go between. Come to make arrangements for Hey Boy.
I see now. The illustrious great one who bears noble firearm and whose honorable will it is to journey forth always in benevolence, yet reaping great treasure, will receive the lowly inferior self of Sui Li Tsung on the fifth day of the seventh moon of the 14th year of Kuang Su.
Yes, sir.
What does that mean?
He wants to know if man who have gone will travel, will see Mr. Tung week from next Tuesday.
Well, why didn't he say so?
He did.
Oh. Well, I wonder why he wants to see me. On Tuesday, the fifth day of the seventh moon of the 14th year of Kuang Su, I serve tea to the lowly inferior self of Sui Li Tsung. Mr. Tsung was a short, round man with a smooth, plump face and shrewd eyes. He wore an elaborate purple brocade robe and carried a delicate ivory fan in his small, dimpled hand. The fan fluttered continuously as he talked, and he talked a great deal. But as the afternoon wore on, I wondered when he was going to say something.
Ah, Excellency, this pitiable one is indeed honored to be at one time know the pleasure of such a cup of tea and to realize its pleasure in the presence of the esteemed one.
Yes. May I fill your cup, Mr. Sung?
No, thank you. The great one of benevolent travel has been the giver of vast treasure to have permitted this unworthy to share his costly time thus far.
Oh, well, I'm sorry you have to be leaving.
At last, the joy of such a meeting, rare and precious as it is, must, like all good things, come to an end. Deplorable one that I am.
What?
So entranced was I with the delight of each passing moment partaken in the presence of the noble one, that this poor muddlehead has experienced a lapse of memory. But now it comes to me. A matter to bring to the great one's attention.
Sit down, Mr. Sung. So, now maybe we'll get to the point.
I beg your pardon?
What's on your mind? I'm sure you didn't ask to come up here today so we could have a cup of tea together.
If the Great One will only allow this unworthy soul...
Please, Mr. Tsung, I don't wish to be rude, but if the unworthy one doesn't wish to waste any more of the Great One's costly time, let's stop all this nonsense and get down to business. Now, what do you want?
Very well, to business. We will discuss conditions of the wedding of Kim Chang.
Hey Boy.
Ah, yes, Hey Boy, The small name by which he is known to you. Now, you as his benefactor...
Benefactor? I'm his friend.
We will assume that as his friend, you will in this case wish to place yourself in the position of benefactor as well. Now, there's the matter of the prescribed wedding gift you're offering in the tradition to the family of the bride.
Well, I don't understand, Mr. Sung. Is it according to tradition to go outside the immediate family in this case?
Gi Kung, father of the bride, is generous enough to allow you, as benefactor, to share in their rejoicing.
I see.
Mei is the only daughter of Gi Kung. In view of this fact, he feels that, besides the conventional ceremonial gifts, there should be an offering of substantial reality.
How substantial?
I believe he estimates in American dollars, 5,000 would be of sufficient substance.
Well, Mr. Sung, it is more than kind of Gi Kung to permit me to take part in this happy occasion and to share in his rejoicing to the amount of a $5,000 donation. But, you see, I'm opposed to this marriage. And if there's anything I can do to stop the ridiculous thing, I will.
Oh, my. That would be most unwise. The Gi family is a proud one. They could not bear the loss of face. May I humbly suggest it would be far more prudent to accept Gi Kung's indulgent offer.
More prudent? What do you mean?
Are you acquainted with Gi Kom Ho of your city?
You mean Bloody Pete?
Yes. He is so devoted to his only sister, I am afraid he would feel the necessity to avenge any dishonor brought to her.
That sounds pretty much like a threat.
As an Occidental, you would never understand.
I don't know, Mr. Sung. I believe a deal like this is recognized all over the world as blackmail. When I mentioned blackmail to Sui Li Tsung, he merely smiled, bowed his head a couple of times, fluttered his fan, and assured me that the lowly one's soul had known a feast in the time spent in the illustrious one's presence or something like that, and he left. He apparently felt we had reached an agreement. As a matter of fact, I wasn't quite sure myself. The whole thing was so outrageous, I was confused. Several weeks passed, and we heard nothing from the Gee family. I was getting anxious. Hey Boy was getting pale and thin. Only Miss Wong seemed undisturbed.
You no finish your breakfast, Mr. Paladin.
I don't have much appetite. The situation with Hey Boy seems to me I should be doing something.
Oh, poor Hey Boy.
Well, I'm at a loss, Miss Wong. I'm afraid any move I make may endanger Hey Boy.
Bloody Pete, bad man.
Well, even if I faced him, there'll still be the rest of the Gee Sung Yap Tong to uphold the honor of the family. I can't fight them all.
Mr. Paladin, you fool around with old customs. You have to fight all China.
You believe in this stuff, Miss Wong?
Miss Wong, Chinese girl. Miss Wong understand, but Miss Wong raised in missionary school. Miss Wong think different.
You don't seem to be as upset about all this as we are.
Miss Wong know one thing. Girls, girls, boys, boys.
Well, yes. I've been aware of that for some time.
Hey, boy, not see girl in China. He not want to marry. He like Miss Wong.
Yeah?
Girl in China, not see hey, boy. Maybe she not want to marry. Maybe she have boyfriend.
Oh, Miss Wong, as I understand, it doesn't work that
work
way.
That
no,
way.
No. Chinese girl wouldn't dare go against her parents' wishes in a case
boy.
Like this. That would really bring disgrace on the family.
Sometimes Chinese girl do, Mr. Paladin, sometimes.
Well, I don't think it's anything to depend on.
We wait and see.
Mr. Paladin. Mr. Paladin.
Well, that's Hey Boy. Come in, Hey Boy.
Oh, Mr. Paladin.
What's the matter?
Downstairs, in lobby, come this way. Bloody Pete, Sui Li Xiong, many men carry baskets on their shoulders. Oh, many things.
You mean they're coming up here?
Yes, sir.
Well, don't worry, Hey Boy. They wouldn't dare start anything here in the hotel.
Oh.
I can't see what reason that... Well, anyway, I'd better have my gun ready.
Oh, they're here already, Mr. Paladin.
Well, we'll see what they have to say. Right now, you just stand back, both of you. Mr. Sung?
Most illustrious one, I come with bowed head to your door as escort to the first son of the House of Gee, who walks in shame to this meeting.
What are you talking about?
May we enter?
All right. Just you, Sung, and the first son of the House of Gee here. Your gang can stay outside. All right, now. What's on your mind?
Kim Ho of the afflicted House of Gee wishes to prostrate himself at the feet of Chang of the noble House of Kim, family name of the one you call Hey Boy.
Ta Fu. Asien. Wu Xin Chen.
Look at that. I never thought I'd see the day Bloody Pete would be kneeling in front of Hey Boy. What did he say?
He said, I'm not a human being. Very sad thing to say.
Oh, Mr. Paladin, what happened?
I'm not sure, Hey Boy. What's the meaning of this, Tsung?
The House of Gee mourns the loss of its only daughter.
Hey Boy's betrothed? You mean she's dead?
She is dead to the House of Gee. She has brought shame and dishonor to her family and brought a great wrong to bear on Kim Chang, whom you call Hey Boy.
How?
Word has come that she has in disgrace deserted her home to secretly marry an unworthy from the next province.
Oh, indeed. What humiliation. And how does the House of Gee propose to restore face to the House of Kim?
The House of Gee grovels in the dust and begs that Chang of the House of Kim will in grace accept the gifts the bears hold. May I ask them to enter?
You mean all those men out there have presents for Hey Boy, whom you call Kim Chang?
Yes.
Sure, bring him in. You might as well tell Pete there he can get up now. Well, that's quite a windfall, Hey Boy, all those gifts.
Oh, yes. Who are you, Mr. Paladin? Oh, my. Hey Boy, I'm pretty confused.
Well, so am I. About one thing. Miss Wong, how does it happen you were able to call a turn on this thing?
Oh, well.
Oh, come on. I know girls are girls and boys are boys. And you had it figured May had a boyfriend someplace. But no, there has to be more to it than that. Now, what?
Mr. Paladin, you know cousin to Miss Wong named Sun Yap?
Don't believe I do.
Well, Sun Yap, nice boy, but most ugly boy ever live.
Uh-huh.
Well, Miss Wong sent picture of Sun Yap to Chinese girl, right on him, Hey Boy name.
So she thought it was a picture of Hey Boy?
Oh, yes. Miss Wong only take chance, but Miss Wong think maybe Chinese girl rather lose face than spend all lifetime with face of Sun Yap. See? Good, please, must get to work.
Women.
Oh, you saw me so proud. Whew, women.
Gun Will Travel. Created by Herb Meadow and Sam Rolfe, is produced and directed in Hollywood by Frank Paris and stars John Daner as Paladin, with Ben Wright as Hayboy, Virginia Gregg as Miss Wong, and Edgar Barrier as Sui Li Tsung. Tonight's story was specially written for Have Gun Will Travel by Ann Dowd. This is Hugh Douglas inviting you to join us again next week when CBS Radio presents Have Gun, Will Travel.
Have Gun, Will Travel on Tuned to Yesterday from December 27th, 1959 on CBS. And that brings to a close this hour of Westerns on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.